king of sports books comes the king of sports podcasts. Unleashed. Presented by BetMGM. Here is your host, Jerry Ferrara and Olivia Harlan Decker.
How in the world can week two follow week one? Oh my God, kickers, kickers! A lot of teams will be trying out new kickers this week. The opening NFL weekend was just nuts. We will get to that shortly, as well as preview week two, storylines, betting trends, advice, and birds. The bird gauntlet. No team has ever defeated all five bird teams in one season. One team in the NFL is trying to do that this season. So we'll waste all of our time by talking a little bit about that. Jerry Ferrara, how was your first NFL weekend with two kids? Yikes.
Olivia, let's just say it's not going to be my Unleashed day, but a future Unleashed is coming. And I love our neighbors, but let's just say someone had a 2-year-old birthday party at 2 p.m. on a Sunday. We'll discuss that for a different Unleashed. That's a different Unleashed. And I didn't attend, but we'll talk about that at another time.
Yeah, what's more foul-worthy, having a fall wedding on a Saturday or having a child's birthday, really any day? No one wants to go to a kid's birthday party. No one.
Yeah, I still say the wedding thing is almost unforgivable. The child birthday, it's like, look, I'm not going to be there. I'll send gifts. I will not be attending. What about you? I mean, you know, you're now in London, 5-hour difference. I've always talked about how much I love Pacific time for football.
You do.
East time is like, okay, what is it like? London time, 5 hours ahead of East time.
Well, it just sucks when your team plays at night. So like Packers Vikings, I was all excited and I stopped watching at halftime because it was late. And honestly, I switched to Entourage. I'm not kidding. I switched because I knew I wanted to finish season two before we talked. And I was sick of seeing Aaron Rodgers eye roll. I had seen enough. I know how the story ends. It was not dissimilar to week one last year when the Packers only put up 3 points to New Orleans. We got 7 points on the board thanks to A.J. Dillon, which is exactly how our season ended last year. I'll talk about that later in Unleashed because I know we have some Packer fans listening and I know everyone's as upset as I am. But yeah, so first NFL weekend in London, I was okay going to bed at halftime and watching some Entourage as I went to bed.
Yeah, I don't know if I would survive. I have a hard time even with the Sunday night game and the Monday night game these days. So you kind of are in night game mode for a while. But look, it's a good thing. London's a great place.
Yeah,
we do have an amazing guest coming up today, which I'm very excited about. It's a guy I go way back with, NFL insider Jay Glazer from Fox Sports. We love him on the NFL Fox Sunday. We're going to try to get him to break some news. It's always tough with Jay. He likes to hold stuff, but also he's doing some really amazing things in the mental health space. He has an Unbreakable podcast. So we got a lot to talk about with Jay. Maybe we'll get a nugget from him, possibly.
You think? We'll try.
It's tough.
Gosh, I don't know.
He saves the good stuff for the company that pays him a lot of money to do so. So, but we'll see. I'll prey on our friendship. I'll see if I can guilt him into, or maybe you could. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
And how do you guys know each other? Tell us about your friendship.
Yeah, so I met Jay. I was getting ready to prep for a movie. I got the rights to play Arturo Gatti, one of my favorite fighter of all time. We've all seen Wahlberg in the movie The Fighter. That's the Mickey Ward story. The kind of other half of that story, a lot of it is Arturo Gatti's story. So I was in okay shape, but Jay was tasked with training me to look and fight like Arturo Gatti, and we formed a fast friendship. I was his first client at his Unbreakable gym, and now I might be his least memorable because everyone in the NFL has worked out there at some point, and even a lot of other actors and musicians. So, but yeah, I expected Jay to be like the, you know, you're like the dude, and there's just so much more to that guy. So we became fast friends. I really consider him like a big, but he almost got me in a fight with an NFL player at the gym. I'm going to definitely talk to him.
What?
We're going to tell that story. I almost got into a fight with an NFL player, a boxing match of sorts. So it wasn't going to be like a street fight, but yeah, me way over my head.
Yeah, Jerry, I love you, but I don't know if you have any place doing that. I don't know. I mean, I've never seen you in the ring, but you're a great actor.
Fake it till you make it, baby. Fake it till you make it. That's how I was looking at that. It was my best role yet, pretending I wasn't scared.
Oh, I'm excited to hear Jay's version of that story. Look, from the NFL weekend, I was thinking about you because you're Seattle Seahawks. They're in the first place in the NFC West. But I was thinking, too, because it was at the same time as the Emmys. And, I mean, you're a guy, you know, I like watching Emmy red carpet. I kind of am into it for that. But you've been to Emmys. Your show's been nominated and won Emmys. So do you have any good Emmys stories? Like, what's it like? Give me behind the scenes scoop.
It is definitely surreal. Here's a little known fact. My opinion, the Golden Globes were always a little more fun. The Emmys are kind of dry, meaning there's no drinking really. There's nothing there. You can't, like, you're in a theater, whereas the Golden Globes, you're at like a banqueting table. There's drinking, there's eating. Everyone's a little loose. The Emmys, you're in like a theater. You go outside to like get a pretzel. You can't get back in. So the commercial break is over. It's still an awesome experience. But one time, I'll share a very, very quick story. The worst part about the Emmys, I'm not complaining, it happens during like the first few weeks of football. So myself and Kevin Connolly, who's a big football fan, we had like Kevin Dillon and Piven were nominated in supporting actor. Yeah. And then we were nominated for best comedy. Those awards are like 2.5 hours apart.
Ooh.
So we strategically made friends with the behind the scenes people at the Emmys. Listen to this move. And Connolly, I give him credit. He orchestrated this move. We were in our seats for Dylan and Piven's award. I think Piven won. And then we had 2.5 hour break. We sneak out of the theater. We talk with some of the behind the scenes people. We get a golf cart and we drive like 3 blocks. We're downtown LA. I think we went to like a Mastro's steakhouse. We had a steak dinner. And I want to say the Packers were playing. No. We watched the Packers and someone, because it's 5:30, 8:30 Eastern, the Sunday night game.
Golly.
We watched like most of the game. We even took a walkie-talkie that was communicating with the Emmys. And when he got like a half hour away from best comedy, we got the chirp on the walkie and we took the golf cart back to the Emmys and we're back in our seats to watch us lose best comedy to The Office that won like 9 years in a row. So,
God.
There you go.
Did anyone recognize you at Mastro's? Were they like, wait
a
second?
Yeah, we're in tuxes. We're in tuxedos. We're two idiots eating steak. No one's there, really, because everyone's like either watching football at home or they're at the Emmys.
That's true.
So downtown, like, we had the whole place to ourselves. It was cool. And then the other worst, I'm complaining about it. I'm not complaining. It's amazing. We always had to work the next day, and our call times are like 5 a.m.
Oh, okay.
So I remember one year we went and we got home kind of late. I remember like my head hitting the pillow and then my alarm clock going off. I didn't sleep. That might have been after a Golden Globes because I felt like I was drinking. So it might have been after a Golden Globes.
Because those are more fun. Okay, good to know that if I ever get an Emmy invite, I'll say, no, I'm good. I have a reservation at Mastro's, but I'll see you at the Golden Globes. Oh my God. But hey, your Seattle Seahawks, I mean, you're looking pretty smart right now. What do you think of that game? So exciting with Russell Wilson getting booed and then the missed field goal to win it. I mean, the Seahawks.
I don't think this prediction and lottery ticket bet could ever look as good as it's going to look. Like, if I could cash it out right now, I probably would be for a much, much lesser rate. But everything I said is coming to fruition. I'm not saying I'm smart. I'm getting very lucky. The Rams definitely have a hard schedule. The Niners, we don't really quite know with Trey Lance yet. And that was a monsoon of a game. We'll talk about that one. We got Peter Andrew coming in. We're going to definitely talk to Peter about his Niners.
Yeah.
But yeah, and you know, definitely. Now they got the Niners next week. They go 2-0. It's what I said weeks ago. You know, it starts to take shape. These narratives that we fall in love with the NFL. That one looks like it could take shape. Geno Smith too. Really, really great game. Always rooted for that guy. Got definitely bum deal with the Jets. Even bummer deal with the Giants. They wanted him to start. That was one of the few things that, I'm remembering the coach's name, wanted Geno Smith to start over Eli, and every Giant fan was in an uproar because it was Eli's last kind of parting shot.
Swan song.
But, you know, they wrote me off, and I didn't write back. We're going to be talking about that quote for a while.
What a line. Okay, what's a better line? Do you remember last year, I think it was after a win in Arizona, and Aaron Rodgers said, how can you not be romantic about football, man? I had that as my Twitter bio. I loved that quote so much. But what's a better line, that they wrote me off and I didn't write back, or that one?
I think Aaron's is just better for like football as a whole. That should be like that inscription should be at his Hall of Fame statue when he gets it.
Yes.
But Geno's was just more inspirational for a guy who's really had a up and down and now back up again career. So I'm happy for the Seahawks. There's room on the bandwagon. People been now starting to talk about this. I'm first. We got the dates. It's stamped. I'm first on this.
Okay. I know. And we have the proof. We can always go back to an episode a couple weeks ago. Another thing you have to be excited about is with the Cowboys losing Dak Prescott for a handful of weeks. We don't know. They're saying 6 to 8 weeks. We'll find out. But it's opening up the NFC East a little bit. And dare I say, your New York football Giants, they're 1-0, beat the Titans week one. Brian Daboll gets the game ball from Saquon Barkley, which really, that to me showed that there's a culture shift happening here. That Saquon Barkley, who had a great game, what do you have? Over 9 yards per play, 164 yards, like absolutely incredible. And he gave the game ball to Joe Shane and Brian Daboll. So I love the synergy I'm seeing in New York, and I'm excited for you long-suffering Giants fans. They've lost the last 5 season openers. They win this one. Brian Daboll's era starting well. But I was looking. Their next 3 games are all at home, Jerry, and I think they're all winnable.
What do you have them in front of you?
I do. Carolina.
I knew that, yeah.
The Cowboys. Yeah. They're beating the Cowboys. And then the Bears, who I don't know what we saw week one with them in San Francisco, but I would think they could beat the Bears at home. And then the Packers in London. So we might be on rocky ground that week, but who knows what the hell will happen. The Giants could go into that one 4-0.
So look, I don't want to get too far ahead. We definitely all fell in love with Joe Judge early on too, but this is different. This is not just a rah-rah guy who gets in Daniel Jones's face when he throws a bad red zone interception. The other big key, this is now 2 years we haven't seen a healthy Saquon Barkley, and we're seeing it. Mm-hmm. So pray that he stays healthy. And, you know, you see him rapping, like I think he was playing Juicy in the locker room. Here's what I say to my fellow Giant fans. Okay, that was amazing. It was a terrible first half. Big bounce back. Went for 2. We know all that. Now, and we won a home season 1 opener, which we haven't won in a long time. The next big deal is get some kind of a home field. Giants have been terrible at home. I think they have one of the worst home, not saying the fans, just like home field. It's like it never even matters to them. You got 3 in a row at home. Really, that's the next step for Brian Daboll. We know you're a culture changer. We know you have balls, excuse my language. Now let's go win some home games. Let's go.
Speaking of balls, God, I love my career.
Sorry, I did that.
Speaking of balls, how about Tyreek Hill in Miami? His quote after the game is, "You're gonna need a wheelbarrow." I'm gonna let people who didn't hear the quote use their imagination. Maybe producer Matt, let's insert the quote there because that was a pretty good soundbite.
Oh man, I say this outside, man. Like, hey, McDaniels, he's gonna need a wheelbarrow, man, for his lift to carry around, man. We got a lot of cojones, you know what I'm saying? So, that's he called my help.
Yeah, it was a great one. And there's so many teams like we just still know nothing about. Dolphins to me are one of those teams. Like, we know they're good. The Patriots definitely were not. I'm not going to say they weren't ready, but they have their own stuff going on. So that, and the Ravens, we don't know a whole lot about because they, you know, they beat the Jets. Mm-hmm. I love my Jet fans outraged on Twitter that they thought Joe Flacco should have won that game. Joe Flacco been winning Ravens games. He just got them another win in week one because he threw 59 times. Like my Jet fan friends expected the Jets to compete in that game. I'm sorry. But now we got Ravens Dolphins week two. I think those are two teams that we still need to see. And a lot of their identity will come out, I think, after that game. Because I really don't know. That's a tough one to pick.
Yeah, no, that is. Yeah, Dolphins are confusing, but there's enough to be excited about there. I was curious to see how Tyreek Hill was going to do there and to see the evolution there and if Kansas City would miss him. And boy, Kansas City did not seem to miss him. Just next man up, get a rookie in there, get some new guys traded in. Nice to meet you. My name's Patrick Mahomes, and here's what we're going to do. I was really impressed with Kansas City, but yeah, Tyreek Hill had a great Sunday as well. You know who did not have a great week? Is the Packers. Mm. And, you know, last year I mentioned earlier, they laid an egg in New Orleans, put up 3 points. So we know that it's possible. And then last year, Aaron Rodgers told everyone to relax. Well, I'm not going to relax. I'm going to unleash.
It's time to unleash.
The last season obviously ended with a loss at home against San Francisco, and it was a horrible game to watch. It was kind of snow, sleet, and, you know, neither team scored an offensive touchdown. In fact, Packers running back A.J. Dillon was the only offensive touchdown of the whole game, and then he got hurt and left, and 49ers special teams did enough to leave Lambeau with a win. It was horrible, horrible to watch. I hate the 49ers, as our friend Peter Andrew knows. But this season started just the way last season ended. AJ Dillon, the only touchdown for Green Bay. And I knew it was bad when our rookie receiver, Christian Watson, out of North Dakota State, who I covered a lot of his college career, and he was fantastic there. And he was with Trey Lance at North Dakota State. And he dropped a wide open pass for a touchdown to start the game. Did you watch that, Jerry?
Oh, not only did I watch, the minute I saw Aaron Rodgers' reaction to that drop, this, it might have been over right there.
It's like when you do something bad and your parents give you that look and you're like, oh,
so
shit,
disappointed in you. The worst thing a parent could say.
And all the memes of Aaron Rodgers after that, it's like, you're done. I saw one that was Gus from Breaking Bad that was like, I don't know if you saw that. He was like, you're done. I'm done. Like, if Aaron Rodgers targets Christian Watson much more this season, I may be surprised because he seems kind of petty like that. Like, I don't know if he's going to target him too much. But look, I mean, we lost MVS, went to Kansas City. Obviously, Devontae Adams went to Las Vegas. Alan Lazard is our number one receiver. He was hurt. But I get frustrated, and why I'm unleashing is because why did Green Bay not bring in anyone this offseason? Like, it's, you don't just need guys in the receiver room. You need studs. You need dudes, and we don't have that. And when you have a back-to-back MVP quarterback, a Hall of Fame quarterback, how are you not giving him weapons? It's just kind of baffling. And I really do want to ask Jay Glazer when we talk to him if, like, OBJ is a possibility for the Packers to get, if anyone at this point is a possibility, because we cannot do all season like this. It's so horrible. And Aaron Rodgers said in camp, the young receivers are inconsistent. So the writing was on the wall, and we just pull up to week one in Minneapolis. Like, we don't know it. We just have to make it official, put it on game tape. So, yeah, that's the problem. It was sickening to watch. I only watched the first half here in London.
Yeah, look, I'm with you. Aaron Rodgers got a great contract. Andrew Brandt mentioned it on our show a few weeks back. There's like some teams who are saying, we have the quarterback regardless of the receivers. And other teams are saying, we don't know if we have the quarterback, so let's bring in as many great receivers around him as possible. I'm not that worried, and you can't be too worried. I mean, it sucks to go 0-1 to your division rival who looks really, really good, but
they do look good.
If I'm a betting man, which I am, still betting on the Packers to be more than okay. But yeah, catch the ball.
To win the NFC North?
Yeah, I think so. Definitely a wild card, but it's going to be right there, I think, in the end.
Okay, what about you? I said my piece. What do you have to unleash on?
Oh, I got to unleash about this because I don't know how to fix it. Here's the only thing I could come up with. Look, first things first, if you are still drafting kickers in your fantasy football league, stop it. Just stop it. I don't want to wait till the last round to take an irrelevant kicker anymore. I've won a fantasy football league because of Young Wei Koo, had like an unbelievable year. It was like my third highest score.
He's great.
It doesn't make any sense. And as we saw this past Sunday, kicking is a mess. NFL, maybe you got to move the extra point back to its original marker instead of trying to make it longer and more difficult. Let's maybe keep the extra point as easy as possible. I love blocks. Block kicks are great. That is a sign that the special teams did their job. They worked on it all week. That's okay. And look, I benefited from missed field goals all week. Broncos missing a field goal. Titans obviously missing a field goal. So I don't want to lose field goals altogether. Let's move up the extra points. And my last bit of Unleashed is, parents out there, you are now one, Olivia. You have a beautiful son. Mm-hmm. I have two sons. This is not even a son. This is a daughter. You know what? Maybe try and raise some kickers. Let's maybe not all play quarterback. Let's not maybe not all play point guard. You know, you're obviously your kid's going to be athletic, at least whether he likes it or not. We'll see. Mine are not going to be athletic. They're not going to be tall, but we could work on some kicking. Let's get some kickers. It's the greatest gig in town. If you are a reliable kicker, greatest gig in all sports, I think, right now, because there are none.
Jerry, I could not disagree more, because I was going to say, I want my baby boy to do whatever makes his heart sing.
Right.
And if it's sports,
great.
There's just one rule. No, there's one rule in our house. If he wants to do any sport, he cannot kick footballs. I refuse to let him kick footballs because I refuse to be the mother of a kicker sitting there in the stands, just, you know, white knuckling the whole game. I feel so horrible. These kickers get death threats.
Yeah, look, I get it. I do.
Oh,
that's why
I'm not going to be the mother of a kicker.
Just no, but I see what my take is. Let's really work on this. Like, raise Adam Vinatieri. That's what we're looking for here. Yeah. Okay, we're looking for Adam Vinatieri. That's the poster we're going to put on Jacob and James's wall. Adam Vinatieri. If we want to play football, that's what we're playing, and that's what we're going to work on. Because being a reliable field goal kicker right now, after that week one, I know week five last year had like the all-time record. It was like 11 missed extra points. It's insane, and it's starting to affect betting, fantasy, and obviously the outcome for the organizations, and that's really what it's about. So let's get it together, kickers, and move the extra point back. Make it easier.
Well, and how about two veteran, well-respected quarterbacks who just moved to a new team and they didn't get a win, Russell Wilson and Matt Ryan, two guys who probably should have gotten a win in week one and they didn't because of the kicker?
Fix it.
Oh, I hate it. In fact, overall, kickers went 82% in week one, and last year the average was 85%. That doesn't sound like a huge difference, but in 1 week, I think that's actually fairly significant.
I am so excited to bring on our next guest. You see him every Sunday on the award-winning Fox NFL Sunday pregame show. He always has the late-breaking news. He's one of my good friends, too, which is just a little bonus for me. He's also one of the best in the business, and dare I say, one of the best dressed in the business, Jay Glazer.
So, Jay, you've been on the front lines, so to speak, of really generation-defining moments in the NFL, from Deflategate to Spygate and everything in between. So what does that feel like when you start to put together some facts of a story that you know will have significant impact? What does that feel like?
Well, listen, I was one who had the Spygate video, and a lot of people don't know this. That was only my second week inside studio at Fox. So those guys didn't want me in there. Like, you know, they're the best who's ever done it. And here comes the new guy, and they're like, what are we giving up airtime to this guy? And so I get the tape, actually, earlier in the week, but it was on a Jewish holiday, and I don't work on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. I forget which one it was. So I know I got it, but I can't look at it until, like, sundown. I'm dying about this. So I finally, like, eventually I do it, and, you know, I'm trying to think how I could say this because I'm still trying to protect certain things. I watch what's on the tape, and at the first part of it, the guy was, like, zooming in on, like, girls in the stands and, yeah, like, the Jet City Dancers or whatever they were called, and I'm like, oh, man, I got punked, and somebody just, you know, my guy or gal, whoever gave it to me, just totally is screwing with me. And then all of a sudden, Brady comes into focus. And then all of a sudden, bam, there it is. Like, there's the Jets coaches, full defensive signals. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Wow.
My life just changed.
Wow.
And it was that moment for me. That was my unbreakable moment where it just changed everything. And I was going through really hard. I was going through a marriage that just fell apart. So, man, I needed something. I need a life preserver, and thank you, God Almighty in heaven, I got that life preserver. And then the story became not so much that I had Spygate, but how did I get Spygate? Because supposedly everything was, you know, every copy was ruined. I'll say this too, and I write this in my book. I called Roger Goodell that morning, and I text him like, hey, dude, you got to call me. And that's how I talk to everybody. Jerry will tell you, I talk to everybody. It doesn't matter if you're my grandma, you're my rabbi, or Roger Goodell, or Jerry, or you, Olivia. I'm going to talk to everybody the same, right? So love me or hate me, it's authentic. You know who you're getting. And I said, dude, you got to call me. So he hits me up, and I said, hey, I just want to tell you before I go on with this, see if I, you know, you have a comment or anything, but I got a copy of Spygate. And he said, you can't, how'd you do that? Like, we destroyed them all. And I said, well, that's what you thought, but I have a copy. And you'd expect Roger Goodell to kind of go nuts. And he went, wow, that's big. Congrats.
Oh my God.
He said, congrats.
Really, yeah. He was like, wow, that's big for you. That's big. Wow.
What was your relationship with Goodell up to that? How well did he know each other?
It was great. It's the same. Jerry will tell you, I talk to everybody the same. The way I look at life, you got two groups. You got God in group A and the rest of us in group B. If you're not in group A, you're in group B with me, and nobody else in group B supersedes anybody else like they live in group A.
I like that.
That's how I kind of operate. But it was wild. And then after that, though, the story became how did Glazer get it? And I even got a call from Senator Arlen Specter, who did the Kennedy assassination. And he's asking for my copy of the tape. And I'm telling him, you know, listen, you know, respectfully, Senator Spector, I think Congress should be spending their time, you know, doing better things with the, you know, than trying to get my copy of Spygate. And then he offered me a bigger scoop if I gave it to him. I said, hey, Senator Spector, respectfully, man, I'm Bobby Thompson right now. You know, I just hit a home run in the bottom of the ninth here in the World Series. Like, there's no way. There's nothing you can have bigger, but also that's not how I operate. Mm. And then he threatened jail time if I didn't give it to him. And I was just like, yeah, what the hell do I care? All I do is fight lift anyway. And my dad is sitting right there and he's like, what are you saying? I'm like, I'm trying to show Congress that I'm off. You're trying to show Congress that you're off. I'm like, yeah, yeah. See, and then my bosses were like, we're imploring you to shut the hell up. I'm like, no, I'm trying to show Congress that I'm off. And they're like, show Congress that you're off. I'm like, see, it's working right now. Working you guys. And then I never heard from him again. But all my sources back then started calling. I thought my phones were getting tapped. They thought their phones were getting tapped with the investigation that was launched. But that was a pivotal moment for me. And it was like, and to this day, you know, nobody could ever take that from me. And, you know, I had the biggest scoop in NFL history.
You know, one thing I always say too, and I was telling Olivia a little bit too, like when you break a story or break news, like it's 100, like you don't do it unless it's 100. And you even told me back in the day, like when you were coming up, I think it was what, the New York Post you were working for, the Daily News. And like, it made so much sense that, you know, you had a bunch of journalists going and talking to whoever the quarterback was. And you were kind of the guy who would talk to the, you know, second string O-lineman about talk what's going on. You built these relationships that are amazing.
When I walked in that Giant locker room in 1993, I didn't have the education of everybody else. I had no experience. You know, I looked in there and I said, man, how could I be different? I want people to really get this here. How could I be different? And, you know, most people are afraid to be different. They want to be a face in the crowd. Am I allowed to curse in your podcast?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, fuck that. I'm going to be my crowd, right? Like, I don't want to be facing the crowd. For everybody out there, fuck that. Be the damn crowd. Be your own damn crowd. So I said, okay, these guys, they're going to work 40 hours a week. I'm going to work 100 hours a week. And which screwed me up. I was making $9,700 bucks a year living in New York City. And Strahan would felt bad for me and drove me back in the city every single day because I didn't have enough money for subway and bus fare. And one day I offered to pay my rent and I jumped his shit over it. I'm like, no, I'll take free rides, but I'm not taking money. And I got all those players kind of like to kind of understand my plight. And so I said, man, I'm going to outwork them by, you know, double. And how could I be different? I felt they were using their pen as a weapon. Well, I was going to start relationships. And how do you do, for me, a good way to start relationships is, that kind of had a pack mentality. So, you know, back then you'd have the Daily News, New York Times, New York Post, Newsday. They'd all have the same story out, right? So if someone's talking to, let's say, Michael Strahan, they all talk to Michael Strahan. They gather around together. So if all of them are one player, I'm going to go forge relationships with the other 52 that no one's talking to. And I'll have something different. I'm not going to have the Strahan story because you can read it everywhere else in every other paper. I'll have stuff from everybody else. And that's how I've always kind of forged. I've always tried to be different, and different scary for a lot of people. But I tell everybody coming up in this business, stand out, like stand out in the crowd. We all want, you know, once I became like an entrepreneur, I want someone that could stand out for me that I could say, you know what? Okay. I could put this on that person's back.
That's powerful.
So I always would talk to Jay, Olivia, like when we'd be training. You know, I was one of Jay's early clients in his gym. He was training me for a movie.
Jerry could fight.
Well, there's a whole other story. Jay almost got me in a fight.
Wait. Let's tell people how this got started in the first place.
Yeah.
He was supposed to play Arturo Gatti.
Yes. I was supposed to play Arturo Gatti in the movie.
Okay. So I was training him to look like Arturo Gatti, and he started really picking it up, and he could go. And so Jerry was legit, like he could fight. But Ken, that was my gig. I'm like, hey, I got him. Jerry is our first ever client at Unbreakable. Our second client, by the way, was Army Hammer, who fucked us over. So fuck him.
Yeah, that didn't age too well.
Okay, so yeah. I don't want to pile on here, but he poached some of our trainers, and I was like, you know what? Fuck this motherfucker. Oh. And now look what's happened to Army Hammer. So
you were out on Army Hammer before anyone was. I will say that. Glazer was out on Army Hammer long before any recent stories.
Long before the world. I was like, Jerry, I'm going to fuck this dude up if I see him somewhere. See, yeah, I should have.
Oh, I don't know. He's into weird stuff. You might not want to mess with him.
No, I'd beat the fuck out of Army Hammer.
Well, I would always ask Jay, like, if I put in a good training session, then I would always get, like, you know, we'd be chilling in the back and kind of a cover, and I would, that's where I would ask Jay, like, my NFL things specifically. And, like, he knew there's things he can tell me, and he knew there's things he couldn't tell me.
Or if you were getting tired, you pretend that you had to ask me something right then and there.
Oh, yeah, that was the other thing, too. And I'd be gassed.
I'm like, I'm not falling for that shit.
I'd be gassed. I'd be like, Jay, just tell me the truth. Is Tom Brady retiring? And he would start for 2 minutes and be like, all right, shut your mouth, hit the bag. Look, you know I'm a big Giants fan. Lot of interesting.
Wait. Go back to the story you were saying. So we had you getting ready to fight.
You had me getting ready to fight.
And what happened?
And I'm training. And then I could say his name, right? We don't care. Orlando Scandrick was training at Unbreakable.
It's your story,
right? And this is not a bad story.
Cowboys cornerback.
And he's like talking a little trash to me. Now, physically,
he talks a lot of trash.
Me and Orlando Scandrick, like, athletically, there's no competition. He's a world-class athlete, a lot bigger than me, a lot stronger than me. But he's watching me train. He's kind of like making fun of me a little bit. So we start talking, and Jay's like, Orlando, why don't you just get in the cage with Jerry if you really think that he, you know, can't fight? And he kind of brushed it off. So the next day we're in there training, and Jay's like, watch what we're going to do to Orlando today. I'm going to hype him up, and I'm going to put you in the cage with Randy Couture. And I'm going to make Randy hold the mitts for you. And we're going to make you look like the beast that you are. So Jay comes in. He's like, Orlando, Jerry's going to beat your ass.
We did a tail of the tape also.
We did a tail of the tape.
For you and Orlando, if you remember that.
He's 5 inches taller than me, 40 pounds heavier.
We put together a tail of the tape. Yeah, we just kind of poke the bear as much as we can.
Right.
And next thing you know, I'm in the cage.
We run a fun locker room over there.
I'm in the cage with Randy Couture. And he's like, and he's calling out the punches real early. He's like, slapping the pads really hard. He's like pretending I'm hurting his hand. It's like Randy Couture. Like I could possibly actually hurt his hand with a punch. And I'm not going to lie, Orlando, if you're listening, he looked a little shook. I heard him say, no, the dude can fight a little bit.
No, Jerry got up in his face a little bit too. And we were like, oh, damn, look at this. And Orlando's like, come on, man. I'm not going to hurt Turtle. I'm not hurting Turtle. And Jerry's like, I'm right here, man. I'm right here. And we're standing right there. We took a picture at some point. That's when we did the tail of tape. We like Photoshop. You do?
I have the picture. I will put that up on Instagram. I have the picture.
Whole tail of the tape, man. It was hilarious.
And this is the kind of stuff that would happen at Unbreakable, at Jay's gym that he built. And it really was like an incredible experience because also it was, you know, like when can a guy like me who has no physical gifts, I trained with Aaron Rodgers. I trained with Jadeveon Clowney. I have no business being there.
You haven't told me this.
You were in there with me and The Rock one day.
I was
our groups are right. What? Me and The Rock were training together there one day, and Jerry's over on the just on the ground there. He's like kind of stretching and warming up. He's like, yeah.
What are you doing, yoga?
I ain't doing part of this shit.
Jay and The Rock are doing like shoulder lifts, like ridiculous weight. And I'm in the back doing like a hip flexor stretch.
Yeah. In downward dog. Jesus, Jerry.
But it's a pretty cool thing. You know, again, it's like I run a good locker room over there. And that's the whole thing is like it's community. I need a community. I need teams for my own mental health issues. I need teams. And so over there, I try to really put together a fun team where no one really cares who you are as long as you're part of the team. Like, Unbreakable is the only gym in America, or maybe the world, has zero mirrors. Because we don't want anybody's back turned to the rest of the team. Like, look at themselves. You're all part of this team together. But also, like, you'll be in there, and it'll be Jerry and Stallone and Wiz Khalifa and a guy in the Seahawks and a guy in the Lakers. And, you know, and everybody kind of training together. And it's just, it's bizarre world, but it fits our world.
Any women?
Yeah. Oh, tons of women.
Yeah?
And that's the whole thing. Those are our sisters.
Is it invite only? How do you get in this gym? My God.
Yeah, you got to kind of apply. But we've had
tougher
Demi
than
for a
Soho
long time.
House we had to
Demi
get in for this year. Place
we
have, of it.
That's, we try and make it the Soho House of training. Like Jen that's Morrison awesome. Is like, oh my God, she's like one of our greatest ambassadors we could ever have. And we have a ton of women in there, all ages, all body shapes, all body types. One gal, we got to lose 135 pounds.
Wow.
And we were having her work out with Snoop every day. It was like crazy. Like you just never expect. But in there, we're all part of the same team. It's beautiful.
I'm picturing Snoop working out and I'm picturing it just really mellow and chill. I can't picture Snoop working out like hardcore.
No, Snoop got after it. What we do there at Unbreakable too is like the workouts, especially fighting, we kind of look at it like, hey, you're all part of the same fight team. So fighting comes out of your soul, especially nowadays where it's a hard, we always tell people it's a hard world outside these doors. So we're going to give you a whole team and a whole family to walk this walk together with. When you're walking outside those doors, you know you got a crew that gets your back. And especially women in Hollywood right now, they need that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Amen. I heard you on a podcast, Jay, saying if they could put the feeling of working out in a pill that I forget how the quote ends, but no one would have any problem.
It'd be a great antidepressant.
A great antidepressant.
It'd be the number. And I got that from Troy Aikman, actually. He said, if you could put working out in a pill,
that's good.
It'd be the number one selling antidepressant in the world. Yeah.
So I was kind of thinking, Jerry, as you mentioned, Aaron Rodgers was there. So that's a perfect example of someone who has been very outspoken about life off the field and his ayahuasca journey and finding himself and all of this thing, this stuff that people haven't talked about, especially a franchise quarterback, especially the face of a franchise. Were you finding that refreshing? You know, Aaron, he's coming out with things that are more alternative. What was your take on his stance on protecting his own mental health?
Anytime a dude comes out and talks about mental health, I applaud it. I'm happy. Yeah. We need it. You know, I just wrote a book called Unbreakable, how I turned my depression, anxiety into motivation, and you can too. And that led to a podcast that I'm now doing, Unbreakable. It was a mental health podcast because we need more dudes to talk about it. Like I said, it's a scary world. And look, I was, whether I was born with it or early childhood trauma, whatever it is, it's my earliest childhood memory. Like I live in what I call a gray, which is depression, anxiety, throwing some ADD. I don't know how to wake up or go to sleep any other way. I just live in the gray. And I didn't sign up for this shit. I want to be very clear. Like, this is not something I asked for. But while I suffered in silence for a long time and I created this character of the glaze that you guys see on TV, it was all to hide the pain. And I suffered, like I said, in silence. Well, I wasn't doing anybody any good by being silent anymore. So I decided to start speaking up. And one thing God blessed me with is the ability to communicate. And I wanted to help others know they're not alone. And, you know, the more I talk about it, and this is really big, the more I've opened up to my friends about it. My friends are the baddest fucking dudes on the planet. They are The Rock and Chuck Liddell and Randy Couture and Michael Strahan. The more I've opened up to them about it, the closer it's gotten us. Nobody's called me a wuss. Nobody's told me to suck it up. Nobody said, oh, come on, Jay, your life is great. And listen, my life is great. It is, but between my ears is a cesspool. It sucks, but I didn't sign up for that. So now I could do something about it. The more, and it's interesting, when the book came out, I thought it'd be predominantly male who bought it. It's not. It's mostly female. And also trying to understand, trying to show that they're not alone, but also just trying to show their husbands, hey, this is how I feel. We need more of these dudes to start diving into that, start looking at it so they can start getting vulnerable and realizing that vulnerability is true strength. And the vulnerability is the one that's going to help out your marriage and help with your kids and help with your relationships. More than anything, help what goes on between our ears, because, man, when you have anxiety and depression, the only way I can say it is it fucking sucks.
Yeah.
I get a little, you know, emotional about talking about it, but it fucking sucks every single morning of my life.
I was compelled to call you after I saw you drop the first episode of the Unbreakable Pod, which everyone should listen to. Sean McVay was your first guest, and I'm listening to it. And obviously I knew it'd be good because, you know, I know you. But really, it was more so impressive of just how McVay opens up to you in a way. That's why I think, and I had to call you because like I couldn't text it. There was something I had to say. I'm like, there really is no better person to do this, because I don't know if Sean McVay's not going to open up to me that way on this podcast. Like, you have these relationships, and like you said, everyone sees you on Fox and they know you from fighting and all that stuff. But I always say that with Jay's like the most healthy, vulnerable guy, meaning he's not afraid to tell you his troubles and show you his scars. And I think that's why people are going to not be afraid to tell him about theirs. The McVay episode, again, I encourage everyone to listen to it. Unbreakable. It's incredible when he talks about going 0 for November and how he didn't think the team could tell he was suffering. And you were like, Sean, your players are calling me. They know. Talk to them.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Be vulnerable. And also like how, you know, with Sean was cool, because I was like, sport like yours, it's not a sports podcast. I want people to know that. I have two mental health checkups during the week. John Gordon, who wrote The Energy Bus, he's on with me tomorrow.
Oh, I like that.
It's, you know, there's,
yeah,
it's every. I'm going to have people who've just been through it. There's somebody who recently had planned to commit suicide and by accident stumbled upon my book, started reading it,
God,
packed up, went home instead of killing himself. I'm having him on, like, to just really talk about what goes through your mind if somebody wants to make that, you know, the ultimate bad decision. But for Sean too, like, hey, you live in a world where your guys are so afraid to show vulnerability because they may think I can get cut or benched or ostracized. Mm-hmm. How do you give them a landing spot? And Sean was great about, look, I have to be vulnerable to show them it's okay to be vulnerable and show them it hurts my feelings when people rip me and trash me. Like, it was cool because, Sean didn't really get the mental health part, the depression, the anxiety. It was me and Andrew Whitworth who really had a big talk with him about it to get him to really understand it. And thank God we did because, yeah, there were times last year he needed that vulnerability to lean into it because he was suffering.
So think how interesting that is. That is during a Super Bowl winning season.
Yeah.
That's crazy to the outside world. I'm married to a professional basketball player. I've been in network TV. Jerry, you're an accomplished actor. Jay, you have reached the peak of our industry. Think about that and think about just those are four people I can think of right away of a lot of ups and downs. So when you look at Sean McVay, a Super Bowl winning coach that while he's on his way to the peak is having such a valley. And I think especially in the NFL and NBA and basketball and athletes are a lot like vets. And I know you work a lot with vets mm-hmm. of macho guys, accomplished guys. They're kind of mm-hmm. one percenters, you know, and that now it's coming forward to be more popular, to just talk yeah. about it. How are you facilitating these conversations?
Well, that's the thing. You know, we talk about mental health, but who gives it words? I want to be one that gives it words. I want to be able to give people words to have this conversation. That's the coolest reaction I've gotten from my book was grandmothers reaching out.
Mm.
And I get choked up saying this. See, and here's the thing, like, you talked about me, Jerry, fighting football, ballers, all that. Because I'm the center of dudism, I could cry right here to you on the drop of a dime. No one's questioning my manhood. But people think it's the other way around. Oh, he's so dudely dude. How could you talk about it? No, because I am such a dude. No one's going to question my manhood.
Mm-hmm.
But I get teary-eyed like this when I think of grandmothers reaching out saying, thank you for the first time in 80 years. I now have the words to have this conversation with my husband.
Awesome.
Gosh. And kids and grandkids. That's pretty damn powerful. That's so it's kind of, I guess it's worth my own suffering to get reactions like that. And, you know, I want people to understand this also because Olivia, you just brought up a great point. You brought up four of us right here who have great lives, but all our problems weigh the same. Mm. Doesn't matter who you are. The thing for me is because I don't know how to get love from the inside out, and that's what my mental health issues do to me. I have no idea what it's like to feel that love from the inside out. It motivated me to do so many big things to get love from the outside in, hoping that it would fulfill me. And I got to the top. I was the first ever minute-by-minute breaking news guy in America, me versus Len Pasquarelli and John Clayton when that internet thing first came out, which I think is going to take off. And I got inducted in the Television Hall of Fame, and I was the first... You know, the amount of money that I've made doing this stuff, man, it's ridiculous. And I thought it was going to be rainbows and unicorns when I got there. And it wasn't. And I still suffer the same because I don't know how to love myself from the inside out. So now I'm spending all my time doing this, trying to find a way to feel it from the inside out. Because my problems are, listen, those first 11 years when I was making $9,700 a year, I was broker than shit, living in crap. And, you know, like I had an apartment where the refrigerator blocked the bathroom door and you couldn't go to the bathroom with the door shut ever. And I'd have to play like bill roulette, like, okay, which bill am I going to pay this month? So which is going to get cut off? My heat's going to get cut off. My electricity is going to get cut off. Man, my telephone bill, I couldn't get that cut off. My rent, I'm going to have to just take penalties. So I understand both sides. I understand broke and unbreakable.
Mm.
And my problems feel the same in both.
God.
Right? So I've got to start doing the work from the inside out if I'm going to feel the way I've always held that hope that I could feel one day. So our wallets are not antidepressants.
That's a great line.
There's different, you know, you have different problems when you're broke and different problems when you're unbreakable, but there's still fucking problems.
And Jerry, I do not want to step all over you here. There's just so much to unpack. And you can text Jay anytime. I only got him on this podcast. but Jay, you mentioned something just with the internet. And the only reason, to be clear, why I brought up our professions is because they're public. And
right.
with the age of social media, I mean, people are just so vicious. And I mentioned my husband, and it makes me sick reading some stuff he's had to see. And I'm sure the three of us can all tell our own stories with that sense. But how do we, as a society, as the human race, how do we overcome the evil of the internet and social media and how vicious we can be to each other?
We've got to start using social media for good. And that's what I've tried to do. And we've got to promote that more. And I think we're probably 5 or 10 years away from it. But look, that's the thing. I'm telling people, I am talking about mental health. It's not schooling that makes me an expert, if you will, on this. It's my suffering. But you don't have to have my level of clinical depression and anxiety and ADD and bipolar and everything. We all, like you said, like, man, we look at Instagram and Facebook and we think our lives suck. And we think we're left out because we're comparing ourselves to everybody else's filtered fraction of a second. Not even a full second. Filtered fraction of a second of one day. And we're going, man, why does my meal not look like that? How come my car doesn't look like that? How come my body doesn't look like that? Why am I left out? Why am I not at that party? Or on Twitter, or man, like, could you imagine walking into someone's office and just screaming outside their boss's office? Look how fat your worker is. Look how shitty his accounting is. Hey, I hope his fucking wife burnt. Like, what are you, like, that's what we get. That's terrible. And the human psyche is not made to see so much bullying and hate. So it wears on all of us, you know, and I think I'm doing my part to try and use social media for good. I hope more and more and more we start doing that, because otherwise, man, this job of all of us to try and help us out with mental health is going to get even harder and harder. I want people to realize at home that when you do tweet shit out like that, it affects all of us. And just think about how you'd feel if we walked in your office and your job was on the line and we just started killing you in front of your boss. You'd all be like, what the fuck is wrong with Jerry Ferrara? How could he come in and do this to me? Like, that's awful. It's a horrible thing. Well, that's what you're all doing to each other right there. So just think about that. How would it make you feel before you tweet that?
Well, buddy, I'm proud to be friends. I'm grateful that you're doing it. Again, the book is Unbreakable. The podcast is Unbreakable. Check it out. Now, I'm going to pretend for a minute. We're going to go back in the day. You're training me. You got the mitts up. I'm hitting the mitts. I'm out of breath. I need a break. All right. Jay, you got anything for us that's spicy in the NFL? Do we have to wait till Sunday to watch you on Fox? If we had to wait till Sunday, we'll wait.
Yeah.
We'll wait if we got to wait.
You got to wait till Sunday, baby. You got to wait till Sunday, baby. You got to wait till Sunday.
All right, listen.
I'm sorry about that. Got to wait till Sunday.
I appreciate it. We'll all be watching Sunday.
Jerry would say, were you in there the day that I helped facilitate a certain trade?
Oh, yes. I was there. Oh, my God.
I forgot that the guy he's replacing was in the gym.
I'm not going to say names. Oh, man.
Okay,
yeah, that's a good one.
Don't say the names. Oh, so uncomfortable. So uncomfortable. Yeah, I was helping kind of facilitate a trade between these two teams, and then I come back in, I announce it to all the players. And there's one guy like, what the fuck? That's my position on that team. I'm like, oh, my bad, dude. My bad. Like, shoot. You know, it was pretty funny.
I'll always say working out at Unbreakable is like when you get, it's like waking up in the morning saying, I had the craziest dream yesterday. That's the one way I would describe it. I had the craziest dream yesterday that you will not believe.
No doubt, right?
That's what it's like.
And by the way, anybody can go to Unbreakable. We just charge you a lot of money. And we kind of interview you to make sure you fit in and you're not going to fan out and you're going to like, but it's the coolest thing because like you'll never see Wiz Khalifa ever like in your life come over like, excuse me, you drop your towel.
Jeez.
Hey, good work over there. You know, hey, great work over there. You just don't see that anywhere except inside Unbreakable.
Yes.
How about that?
Hey, but you're Giants though, man. Joe Shane and Daboll. And it's just, they are changing the culture there, which you need because the culture was, hey, we're the Giants. But at the same time, it was like, we're waiting for the sky to fall. They always have this thing of they're waiting for the sky to fall. And also, like, in the last regimes with Dave Gettleman, it wasn't a place that was work was fun to go to. Now it's changed. They're bringing all, like Strahan said on our show, Joe and Brian are bringing all the Giant legends back. They're bringing them in there, which, why they didn't do in the past, I don't know. But they're doing it now. And, yeah, I think, you know, their cap situation isn't great. But they're going to change the culture in there for your Giants. I think they're going to end up being they're on the right track.
I'm trying very hard to get him on the show. I've reached out to my contacts, and I've not gotten as far as I would like.
Have you kept in touch with, I hooked him up with Kevin Stefanski.
Yes.
Last year. Have you kept up with him?
I have kept up with him. I typically don't text or call during this. Yeah, Jay calls me up one day. He's like, I know you're in Cleveland.
No, be a friend. These guys have no friends. You got to be a friend.
I want to be a friend.
Text him during the season.
That's a good point.
I don't want to bother him while he's like preparing for a game against Baker.
Well, that's what everybody does. Okay, so that's the problem, is that these guys have no friends because everybody's like, oh, I don't want to bother them during the season. Yeah. And then nobody talks to him.
I'm going
to
text him.
It's lonely at the top.
I'm texting
him. So you got to be his friend. Yes. Be his friend all the time.
Jay, you're the best.
I like that.
Thank you.
You know, another interesting story that you broke just on Sunday is that the Steelers don't plan to play Kenny Pickett this season after Mitch Trubisky struggled in week one. Do you think they may change their tune on that?
They don't want to change their tune. I could say that. You know, like certain things, it's going to have to align in a certain way for them to do it. But like, and this is, you know, right from Mike Tomlin, that he really wants Kenny to sit and learn for a year. And, you know, because I had said to him also, like, it's kind of like you look at Trevor Lawrence, and we've seen a lot of quarterbacks over the years just get shell-shocked in year one and they don't recover from it. Now, I don't know if that's going to be the case with Trevor, but he certainly doesn't look like how Joe Burrow does, right? So you're like, you're hoping that he's not totally shell-shocked from that first year, but we've seen it with a ton of, you know, the Tim Couches and the David Carrs and the Achilles Smiths and the, I mean, we've seen it with so many first and second picks of the draft, and I think he's trying to protect Kenny.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's his plan. So could things change? Yes. But the plan going this year is to not go to Kenny Pickett at all this year.
What about the 49ers? What do you know about their quarterback situation? Trey Lance struggled in the opener. Jimmy G standing there on the sideline, and he has a no trade clause, but is he just going to sit there for insurance, or will they find a team for him to go?
No, I don't think they're going to find a team because their draft, their asking has gone up. Now that they got him to reduce his salary, they got the best backup quarterback in the league.
Absolutely.
So it's going to take like a two to get a guy, you know, second rounder to pry Jimmy away from them. And once Jimmy came back and started working with them, it actually boosted Trey, because Trey is a competitor. So all of a sudden, man, you just started seeing him whizzing around a lot more and, you know, a lot harder in practice. And having that competition, I think, is something Trey needs.
Okay, what about the Cowboys? I'm just going to keep going because I know you know, and I want to be sensitive to your time. But speaking of...
I think Dak will be back a little bit sooner than they originally thought.
What, not six?
They said like 8 weeks it was first reported. And yeah, now it's probably like four-ish. So, but again, he's a really good healer. Dak's a great healer. So that's a certain thing. Some guys don't heal well. Dak's a great healer.
Yeah. But now Jerry Jones can be very impatient. And he said in the preseason that he has a championship roster. But if Dak is missing, let's say, four or five games.
There's nothing out there, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's nothing out there. There's nothing out there.
But does that cool the temperature?
Like, why is Jimmy Garoppolo going to go to a team with a beat-up offensive line? He won't trade his no-trade clause for that.
Yeah.
Right? And it takes Jimmy a while to pick things up. Like, you know, it's going to take him a while to pick up that offense, is what I mean. And by the time he picks it up, Dak will be back. So if I'm Jimmy, I'm staying put. And, like, you're going to – I don't know who else is out. Like, Mason Rudolph? It's like
– Yeah.
It's just not really kind of worth it. And again, if Dak is back in 4 weeks, then it's going to take somebody 2 weeks, right, to pick everything up.
True.
So I think you're better with Cooper.
Okay, last player I'm asking you about, because I went off on this in our open, but I'm a big Packer fan. Can we somehow get OBJ there? Can we get anyone there?
He's not healthy. He's not healthy.
He will be
in
November.
He's not going to be healthy for a while.
We'll take him in November.
November or December. So they might. They were talking to him in the past, but I think also the last time they did that, he kind of let them, I think they felt they were getting him, and the whole time he was just playing everybody to get to the Rams.
But he joined that team in November and won a Super Bowl, so I feel hopeful.
No, I hear you there, but if the Packers may think that, hey, man, he bamboozled us last time. But no, the Packers, it's interesting because you think, man, if that kid caught that first pass,
right,
would everything have been different? I don't know the answer to that.
I think it might have been. But Olivia's worried, but...
I think it might have been too.
Don't be worried, you know, Olivia. It's a long
But day. Also, like, that team should not have let Devontae Adams go. It's bottom line.
No.
Absolutely not. Aaron should have gotten on a plane, flown out there.
Yeah.
Said, man, whatever I need to do, I'll give you a foot rub every day. I'll give you some of my ayahuasca. I'll take you down to Brazil. Anything you need, we're in. And, you know, it's just, man, that one right there was a head scratcher for me.
Well, we got a little bit, buddy. Thank you. You're the best. Again, Unbreakable, the book, Unbreakable, the podcast. My guy, Jay Glazer. Yep. Have a good rest of the day. We will see you Sunday, anxiously waiting for you to talk give us some scoopage.
I hope I could have some this weekend.
All right, buddy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
See you, guys. Appreciate you.
All right, I have been working hard, Jerry. I really have. I told you I would. I finally finished season two of Entourage, and it's incredible. You're so right. You told me it was a great season. Everything gets richer and more meaningful as time goes on. So first of all, you said season two is one of your favorites. Why is that?
It's because we really, as actors, started figuring out like what we were doing and what really works and what doesn't work. And then something happened in between our first season and our second season. HBO started on demand. So every college kid who went back to their dorms in September kind of caught up on the show and binged it. And that's how binge TV wasn't even a thing back then. And that was the beginnings of binge TV. As I saw, we were one of the highest on demand viewed shows of all time. So by season two, we were kind of in the public eye.
That's really interesting how that followed what is a trend of how we now consume TV and movies. That's crazy. But I texted our group chat last night saying, hey guys, my new favorite character is Lloyd. And our producer Joel wrote back, I can't believe I'm getting this text in 2022. So I know I'm really, really late to the party, but tell me about Rex Lee. He's the guy who plays Lloyd and he is gold.
He's amazing. You know, Rex, when he came on, it was one of these parts, and this has happened on the show before, and this happens all the time in TV. I don't think Doug Ellen laid out his character of like, hey, I got 5 years of material for you. I think when he got the part, it was this one episode, maybe like another one, who knows? And he was so good from the moment he came on set and was just perfect. And the juxtaposition of like Ari and Lloyd becoming like this bromance in a way was incredible. And he just killed it so hard that he became a series regular for years. And that was purely based on he came in ready. I think at the time Rex was a casting director and might've like self-submitted himself for the show.
No. He's a casting director for Entourage?
No, I think
at HBO
he was in casting and crazy. I think he submitted himself and then came in for the audition. He killed it so hard. It was immediately so like, okay, this guy is going to be a big part of the show.
Oh, and you just end up cheering for him so hard. They're like Batman and Robin. Like he's so good. And then the Valley episode.
You got so much more in front of you with Lloyd too, by the way. So much more in front of you.
Good. The Valley episode is one of the most popular and I can see why. That episode must have been so much fun to film.
It was, and it is definitely in most people's top three. It's the one one of the ones I get asked about the most. And it's weird because it was so removed from like a typical Entourage episode. There was no big premiere. The whole episode was about, you know, Vince doesn't want a big deal. We're going to go to a theater in the Valley to watch the movie. But what you really got exposed to, which I always back in the day wondered if people in like middle America, basically outside of LA and New York, would care at all about tracking. That's what a lot of the episode's about. This movie, up and coming movie star, has a big giant studio movie coming out, and it's all about tracking the numbers. And I guess in an age now where analytics and numbers are everything, the episode was kind of ahead of its time because obviously the blackouts skewered the numbers and all that. But we end up at a high school party and people love that episode.
Yeah, tracking, I hadn't really thought about before this episode, to be honest, but I can see how stressful that is. My God, it's like if you were, you know, in any other industry, it's hard to think of a parallel of, it's like if you're a salesman and like you're waiting for a sale to come in. But I mean, you're in movies and has that been a dramatic moment for you in real life?
You know, I really only experienced it once where I was a big enough part of the movie where I certainly felt some of the pressure.
Sure.
But it was weird because the movie I'm talking about, it's called Think Like a Man. It was one of Kevin Hart's first movies that helped launch him into the stratosphere. But that cast as a whole is just amazing. It's Gabrielle Union. It's Regina Hall, Michael Ealy, Romany Malco. So many great actors. And I'm lucky enough to be in it. And it was made for a reasonable number. And I remember that, okay, if the movie opens at 20, we're all thrilled. Then you say, hey, it's tracking pretty well. Might get to 25, maybe be number two in the country. If that happens, forget it, guys. Christmas presents for everyone. And then by Saturday, the movie, oh my God, this movie might hit 40 and it's going to be the number one movie and knock out, I forget whatever was number one at the time. And the emails and the people coming up and calling, it was like an all day, all night affair. It was so exciting, but also terrifying. Wow. And it all ended for me. It did hit those numbers. It was the number one movie. It ended up making $100 million at the box office, and we did a sequel.
Wow.
But in almost pure Entourage fashion, to celebrate, one of my agents says, look, you got the number one movie in the country. Guess where we're going? Taking you courtside to the Laker game, just like out of the show. And it was Easter Sunday. It was Lakers Thunder. It was the game that Meta World Peace elbowed James Harden in the head and knocked him out cold. It was that game. Both teams chasing playoff seating.
Oh, geez. Oh,
we're
God.
Sitting courtside in the best seats at Staples Center. And I hate this always ends with a Kobe Bryant story. I know everybody has a Kobe Bryant story. I have video to back this story up. Sitting next to my agent, fourth quarter of the game, close game, loose ball heads toward the stands, right where we're sitting. Kobe Bryant and Serge Ibaka, who are large men. Serge is a really large man. Full speed ahead, right at us. Kobe Bryant dives shoulder head first with Serge Ibaka into us, totally obliterating my agent. I'm talking shoulder to the face, elbow to the face. Serge Ibaka takes out the woman next. Our chairs got ripped out from the ground and we flipped backwards and Kobe Bryant landed on top of me. On top of me. All the players run over. They're peeling bodies off of each other. And I get up and Kobe gets up and everyone's up. My agent's bleeding. His mouth is bleeding. His elbow's bleeding. And Kobe kind of looks at me, but not like fully in the eyes, like clocks me and is like, oh yeah, think like a man. Congrats. And goes back into the game. I'm like, and then they won the game. My agent had to get brought backstage for medical attention. And I have the video. If you watch it in slow motion, I did not get anything. I just, the momentum knocked me back. I mean, Kobe went full speed, shoulder first into my agent's face.
So is the video you taking a video of the game that then became this crash?
No, it's on like the ESPN broadcast. Mike Breen's like, oh, Kobe Bryant dives into the front. It's in slow motion. They reviewed it 100 times. It was... Again, it's like fourth quarter, 30 seconds left. It was a crazy moment in the game.
Two good Kobe stories out of you so far.
I think those are my only two, but I'll stand by though. I'll put those up there with anyone who didn't actually play with or against Kobe.
Oh, that's rich. Okay, well, I'll start season 3. I'll have more questions for you next week.
The Lions.
Pete, we're going to get to your $100 weekly challenge in just a second. But first, for the first time in NFL history, something is in play here that has never happened before. And I am tracking this like a hawk. No team has ever beaten all 5 bird teams, you heard me correctly, in one season ever. But the Saints have a chance now. They've already downed one with their big comeback against the Falcons in week 1. And here's the other 4. They have the Seahawks in week 5. The 0-1 Cardinals in week 7, Ravens in week 9, and then the Eagles in week 17. So, Peter Andrew, can the Saints make NFL history and go 5 out of 5 for the bird gauntlet?
So, yes. And I think we actually had that as a bet on BetMGM before the season started. Was beat all the birds. I forget what the odds were, but it can happen. If anything, this is the one they had to take care of. This is the upset central. Falcons looked really good for most of the game, took care of business. You got to beat the first one to get to the next 4. So there's a shot.
Yeah. Jerry, what do you think? Your Seahawks, are they going to let that slide?
I do fear for my Seahawks because they're going to be going to New Orleans for that game in week 5. Oddly enough, the one that I think, and obviously the Ravens and Eagles will be a challenge for sure, but the Cardinals in week 7, which is Thursday Night Football in Arizona, that has like sleepy, like, we're here. Yeah, that could just be a problem, I think. That might be the one that might get him. That's my early prediction. I'm on fire with some of these predictions that are really weird. So that's another weird one for you.
I love that it's his Seahawks.
I know. None of this makes sense. It's also his Coastal Carolina Chanticleers and Michigan Wolverines. We are all over the map here. Okay, Pete, let's recap quickly last week. And I'm not going to give you hell for this. I know you're expecting that. But your picks last week for your $100 challenge were not bad. and I think we almost signed off on all of them. But just to recap, you lost half of your bets on Carolina. God bless Baker Mayfield. You were right behind him. That was 5 units of your 10.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
Boy, did he look bad in the first half.
I know.
But 14 seconds left in the game, it looked like they were going to pull it out. Obviously, yeah, a 58-yarder to win the game. So it was close. But sure, there's some things that team has to figure out. I think they got to get McCaffrey more involved. Like I said, Baker just did not look good for most of the game. Stepped it up in the second half. So I stuck with my pick. I actually took him again with the spread, which I think I had him at -1.5. So I would have lost that bet regardless in Vegas. But it's one game. I'm not going to get, and it's 1 week. I'm not going to get too crazy on it. There was a shot to win.
He sounds like a coach. It's only 1 week. We're on to the Giants. He sounds like a coach.
He does.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see. But Baker's going to have to step his game up if he wants me betting on him next week, which I'm sure he's worried about.
And then, you know, this one I've got to give you a little hell on because you give me so much with any of my teams. So let's talk about your Niners. So they're in Chicago, Soldier Field, disgusting turf. Soldier Field is horrible. Driving rainstorm. And yeah, your boy Trey Lance, and it looks so good, my friend. Jimmy G sitting on the sideline, and they don't know what's going on there. Yeah, Niners -7, and they lost to the Bears by 9. That was a part of a parlay. Giants +6, Chiefs -4.5. So your own team was the one who lost you that parlay, and that was 1.5 units.
If you thought I sounded bad like a coach the last one, I'm going to sound more like now. Growing pains of being essentially a rookie QB. I think he took the blame of the game, and it was on him, a couple of really poor passes, but you can see how much they struggle with that weather. I mean, it was freaking disgusting, missing tackles left and right. In fairness, Fields looked great scrambling out of pocket. And now I'm worried because now they're playing Jerry Seahawks next week, -9.5. We'll get to that in a second, but, yeah, I'm a little worried, but, you know, it's 1 week again. Trey Lance is young. He's going to make these mistakes. They kind of signed on to that and know that's going to be the case. But that was, I think, a winnable game. They should have taken up in the dub.
And then I should mention you won 2.5 units. Texans +8.5. That game was a tie. And then the one.
Almost won outright.
I know. Seriously.
They won outright. They deserved it.
And then lost 1 unit. And I'm with you on this one because you should have won this one. It was a one-game parlay for Bills-Rams Thursday night. Bills -2.5. You got that. Josh Allen over 274.5. You got that. Gabe Davis over 69.5 receiving yards. Got that. Kupp 94.5 receiving yards. The one thing you missed was anytime touchdown for Allen Robinson. And he only had one catch all game. I was really disappointed with his lack of involvement. But I really liked that one-game parlay. So I think our listeners should still take your advice because I think you're right there.
Yeah. And two things. One, if the Rams are going to do anything this year, it can't just be Cooper Kupp. It's got to be Allen Robinson as well. I think he might have had 3 targets, if that. So I know he had the one late one. Jerry and I were talking late. I think like last drive of the fourth quarter, almost had that touchdown. I think it was a bit overthrown. They have to get him involved. Second thing, if you would have opted into our one-game parlay insurance on BetMGM, if one leg fails on a 4-plus leg parlay, you get your stake back. So considering I got everything else right, you would have gotten your stake back. Just a little nugget for those that aren't opted in. All you need to do is opt in once, and it's good for the season. So anytime you place one each day, you can get that stake back.
That's perfect for a guy like me. I go 4 out of 5 a lot. You got 3 out of 5 insurance too. I'll take that if you got that too.
We'll do a special one for you. So yeah, it's tough, but I feel good about some of these one game parlays. I think we're onto something. Yeah. Just got to get over that hump.
All right. Want to take us through your picks this week?
Yeah. So keep it short and sweet here. I'll go with the 3 straight bets first, and they're each $30 or 3 units. So against my heart, I'm going with my head. Seahawks +9.5 to cover against the Niners. Geno Smith's quote at the end of the game just was the tell-all for me. They wrote me off, but I didn't write back. I think that's what it was, which is just like a brilliant quote. So I think they keep it competitive. Niners are at home. Obviously, a tough loss last week, but I think it's a close game. Geno, in fairness, looked really good. I think there's some things they have to sort out a little bit. I think they need to up their run game a little bit more. I think the split between pass and run was a little bit
Unbalanced?
Yeah. I think the run pass game was just a little bit unbalanced. So I think there's some things to work on, but a great win. 12th man was a big help. Revenge game.
I see what you're doing, Peter, Andrew. I see what you're doing, the reverse jinx. You're doing the reverse jinx. I see what you're doing.
Reverse jinx, mental hedge, whatever you want to call it. It's got
I don't need that in my life, Peter. I actually like the bet. I like what you're saying, but I don't like the reasons why I think you're doing it. I don't need that kind of stuff in my life. You were trying to tank my Seahawks call early. But I do like
you're
the pick.
You're getting paranoid, Jerry.
Yes, I am very paranoid. I like the pick. All right, so that's for 3 units. I like that. Okay, what else you got for us?
Yep, so Houston plus 10. Again, until they do otherwise, and they're going to be an 8, 9, 10 point dog, take them. I think they did really well. OJ Howard, strong game, 2 touchdowns. Brandon Cooks, as the number one receiver, had a strong game. On the defensive side, Pittman and Jonathan Taylor had monster games. They were able to hold them to 20 points. I think all around pretty impressive game. Davis Mills, I thought, did what he needed to do. He's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not Aaron Rodgers, but he did what he needed to do to unfortunately get the tie. So I'm going to keep riding them. As long as they're a 7-plus point dog, I think it's worth the value. You know, one of these games, they'll get blown out and go the other way. But until then, that's what I'm riding.
All right, you got 4 units left.
Last one of the straight bets. I'm going to go Dolphins plus 3.5 against Baltimore at Baltimore. I'm not sure what it was. You know, I think Tua looked pretty good. Their defense looked rocking, probably a top 5 defense in the league this year, but also the Pats looked awful. So we'll see. I took it because of the hook. If it was 2.5, I probably would have laid away, but 3.5, I can definitely, you know, see it being a close field goal game. Can certainly see them winning, going 2-0. Offense looked great. Tua looked good. Everybody was involved. Whether it was Waddle, Tariq had, I think, close to 100 yards. Chase Edmonds out of the backfield, also passing. So it looked like they're a well-oiled machine. Mike McDaniel, genius. I won't say the quote that Tariq said about him, but
he's a cojones. Smart.
Yeah, the cojones, exactly.
But he said it funny. I don't think he said cojones. I think he's, anyways. No. Yeah, great quote. Yeah. Going to need a wheelbarrow.
Exactly. So they're another team, I think. You know, 2 is the question mark. If he plays well, they've got all the other tools. Maybe don't have an RB1, but with Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle on both sides at wideout position, hard not to take them with the extra half point. And then the last one, we're going to give this another shot. We're probably going to do this every week.
Yeah.
Thursday night football. We're going to do another 1-game parlay. $10 plus $7.75. So you'll win back $87.50. That includes your stake.
Oof.
So I've got 5 things here. Chargers plus 3.5. Again, taking the hook. I see this being a high scoring game and a close game. Yep. I think Chiefs and Chargers always play those type of games. So I've got Chargers plus 3.5. I've got the over 54.5. I don't think that's going to be close. I can see a 60 plus point game. I have Eckler to score a touchdown.
Yeah, he didn't have one last week.
Yep. So Eckler to score a touchdown. Keenan Allen is likely out. So there's going to be a little bit more production from him. He, like you said, he didn't have the touchdown last week. I have him plus over 35 receiving yards. So again, out of the backfield, he will be a prevalent piece to the offense. And then the sure hands on the other side with Kansas City, Kelce over 75 yards.
Love that.
I think he's obviously their number one. They spread the ball around nicely, but he will be the target. 75 yards seems pretty easy to do in what I think is a high scoring game.
Hey, Austin Eckler only had 36 yards last week, so that one's kind of close, but that's weird. I was shocked. He had 14 carries for 36 yards. Interesting. He didn't get more production.
Chargers had some things to figure out last week. I think they opened things up a little bit more. Again, Keenan Allen out, most likely he is going to be a bigger part of the offense. Should have been last week, but I feel good about that. I think the only one I'm concerned about is a late touchdown by Kansas City and Chargers don't cover. But everything else, I think, is, you know, it's a good chance of it hitting.
Jerry, do you like it?
I like it.
All right. Peter Andrew, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on.
All right, Olivia, that's another one in the books for us. And football is here. I feel already relaxed. Thank you to Peter Andrew. Thank you, of course, to my friend and now your new friend, Jay Glazer. Another good episode. And also, quick shout out. Congrats to Le'Veon Bell. knocked out Adrian Peterson. Yes. He came on the show. So we're 1-0 boxing wise with guests. We're 1-0, Olivia. We will be back next week. We'll have a lot to talk about. Another episode of Unleashed.
Peace.